And welcome back to EAA Radio. I am Wireless Mike.
And Magneto Mel.
And right now we're joined by Bob Swaim of the NTSB. And what's your title at the NTSB?
I'm the Engineering National Resource Specialist, which simply means I'm one of the longer-term remaining engineers we have.
Okay. And what do you do in that job?
I'm an accident investigator, and we travel around the world and basically pick up the parts and figure out what happened with the airplane accidents.
Okay, and fortunately, we haven't had any recent accidents of the major airline variety recently. So what have you been spending your time on?
Well, what people don't see is the number of incidents that we do, the wire fires and those kinds of things domestically. And then we've been doing a lot of work overseas, both with the big airplanes. There was a Saudi accident, I guess, recently, and a lot of the business jets.
And now how does the NTSB operate? What's the structure of being involved with international accidents like that?
Okay. The international accidents are the ground rules for how to do an international accident. It falls under the International Civil Aviation Organization. So if you were to fly from here to the Europe, let's say, there are some ICAO rules about how you would conduct that flight. Well, one of those books, sort of, is an Annex 13, which puts the ground rules for how to do an accident investigation if it involves an international. So if we have U.S. passengers or a Boeing overseas or an Airbus here in the U.S., that's the ground rules. And it says that if everybody who's involved with that flight can be part of the investigation, but the head of that investigation is whoever's land it falls on.
Okay, now do you ever assist organizations in other countries just by the nature of having experience or equipment or systems that they may not have where the U.S. is not even involved but we're assisting?
Yes, we've done a number of those too. Or if it's a U.S. aircraft, okay, U.S. built aircraft that falls into a country that doesn't have much of an investigation capability, officially it's still their report. But we may actually do the investigation and write the report for them. We've done a few of those.
Now, there was that accident, I believe it was from Brazil back to France. Was that where the airplane just kind of disappeared into the water? Did you guys get called in for doing any of that stuff?
Yes, we've been helping. That was Air France Flight 447 a year ago. And we've been helping. The problem, of course, is that it went into such deep water and fragmented that the parts have not been found. We have no black boxes to work with, and what we've been working with is the telemetry that came off the airplane.
Okay, but that's where you have a lot of expertise that you can bring, even though it wasn't a United States airplane and it wasn't going anywhere to or from the United States.
Absolutely, good point. Yeah, you
excellent.
Got it.
Now, you have quite a history with, aircraft systems investigator is what I have
right
for you. What exactly, it's quite a large purview. I see you've got the jets and you've got experience with the helicopters and, you know, a variety of. So what kind of background does somebody usually get to do what you do?
Well, I've been at it with the board for over 20 years now, and so I've represented the U.S. for the whole investigation overseas, and I've done just parts of the investigation. But to do the engineering side of these investigations, we're looking for somebody who has typically prior engineering and investigation experience, preferably somebody who's worked with airline accident investigations before. And before this,
where would one get that experience prior to working with accident investigations?
Okay, good question. In my prior career, I was a Lockheed Field Service rep in L-1011s. And, of course, we had a few problems with L-1011s back in the day and before they stopped flying them. And so that's part of how I came into this.
And you're an AMP as well, right?
Right. Yeah. I also have an AMP background. And of course, most AMPs get involved with something that's broken at some point.
Almost on a daily basis.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Are there a lot of job opportunities at the NTSB?
We actually do have a few openings right now.
Are you looking?
Hey, there you go. Yeah.
I'm missing that AMP background for that.
We actually have, I think it's five modes, the air, the marine, the highway, the pipeline, the hazmat. And so we do have some openings. If you visit us in a in the federal pavilion, the federal building, we're in the southwest corner, and we've got a list of what jobs we do have open. It's also on the website, ntsb.gov.
Now, I see you also have some dive background.
Right.
And you mentioned the Marine. Do you stick, you personally or people, do they stick with just aviation? Or if somebody has a varied background, do they kind of run the gamut of interest in accident investigations? Or
no, they typically keep us in a mode. So almost all my career is airplanes. Every now and then there'd be something airplane related in another mode, and we'll help out with other modes or even other agencies. We've done some help,
such as
to
a plane
FBI.
Crashing in the water or something, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, one of the things that we're very good in my engineering group, we've got a lot of experience that most people don't understand or have, is recovery of the big airplanes when they hit water. We had the China Air 747, the TW 747. And people don't understand how an airplane breaks when it hits the water or how to recover it. It's kind of a unique job opportunity.
Is there any insight into some of those things that you can impart as far as what might be involved with water that you wouldn't encounter in a regular, I guess I can't call it a regular, a no crashes regular, yeah.
But yeah. No, for us, that's all we do is accident investigation, so that we do have what we kind of consider normal. And with a water recovery, typically you're going out, you're adding a couple steps to it, and of course you're not able to get true hands-on until you can recover the pieces. So we go out, typically we do a lot of bottom mapping, figure out what is where, try and recover the recorders. Some of these are so deep, and you use the example of Air France 447, some of these are so deep that really all we need to get at first is the recorder equipment. And then figure out, do we need to go back and look for specific pieces of hardware that the recordings would make us want to look at?
Sure. Now, a lot of people are interested in accidents, and because we like to look at them so we can prevent other accidents. And we did have a couple of higher profile things with the Hudson. We pretty much know what caused that, birds. But the Colgan accident in Buffalo, that also got the final report issued earlier this year, I believe it was.
I believe that just came out, right?
Yeah. Do you have any wisdom to impart on that accident that, you know, if you haven't read the report, that some people might find interesting of, you know, what
some of the contributing factors and...
Yeah.
It really came down to crew professionalism. We had some crew professionalism issues in that one. To the point that the board started putting together a string and saying, look, in Colgan and in a few others, we had crews who probably were not performing at the level we wanted them to. And so the NTSB just held together a large forum downtown D.C. and brought together a large part of the professional community in looking into how could we improve training, how can we improve flying handbooks, how can we improve simulators. And that's one of the examples of things that we do behind the scenes.
And how contributive was fatigue in that accident?
It definitely was part of it, especially on the part of the first officer. She'd commuted in, and she wasn't feeling good, so she took some over-the-counter meds. So there was some involvement there.
And what kind of recommendations have come out from that accident that you said you had the meeting with all the professionalism about pilot professionalism, but has anything else come out of that accident that either you have been implementing or you're working to implement?
Yeah, we've made a number of recommendations to the FAA, basically in those areas I kind of lightly touched on as far as the training. And I believe there was one on flight ops quality, basically how management keeps track of the pilots once they're out of the company's hands and they take an airplane and they're flying with it. How do you check up on them? So I believe that was one of the recommendations. It had to do with FOQA and things like that. Those came out of that.
We heard that buzzword yesterday.
FOQA, yes. Mm-hmm. And for those non-aviation people, what does FOQA actually stand for?
It's Flight Operations Quality Assurance. And it's like I say, after a flight, the company, the airline can go back in and they have worked out with their union how they can go and use the data from the recordings from that flight and make sure the crew isn't out and playing around or doing something that is not very professional.
Right, and the important part of that, you know, so nobody thinks that Big Brother's watching, is all that stuff is anonymous. And that's, you know, so the company doesn't actually know who was doing each flight. They just look for trends out of that information where they can use that to improve the training to find specific areas where people aren't doing the correct things and then adjust for those trends.
That's absolutely right. And it comes down to the same for folks here. In the GA world, we are still looking at people flying VFR in instrument conditions. We're still looking at people flying unstabilized approaches during IFR approaches, and they hit short of the runway, they hit trees, they fly into weather, lose control of the airplane.
Now, about a year and a half ago, there was, I believe, a Pilatus that crashed out west someplace.
Butte, Montana.
Is that the case there, where there was in IFR conditions an uncontrolled or unstabilized approach?
Well, they were on final to Butte, Montana, doing a diversion, but that's not a finished investigation. They're still looking at fuel pumps and icing and other issues, valve positions. They're still looking at other issues in that airplane. So that one's not a done deal yet.
That's interesting because, you know, that one's older than some of the other ones that you've been able to wrap up. What causes that one to be taking longer?
Long story short, it was an unusual accident, and we have very little to work with. We had no recordings. There's very little memory from the airplane. And once it hit the ground, it burned so extensively that we're working with a lot of ash.
And it's hard to put together ash.
It's all there. It just changed shapes, and sometimes the shapes are real small.
But, okay, that's interesting. Now, I do believe that in the past I heard that you're trying to keep most of your accident investigations down to 1 year. Is that what you're still trying to do for the most part?
We are. And we've been very good at bringing down the length of the investigations, leveraging, bringing in people to help. But then again, some of these are more complex, and Pilatus in Butte, Montana is a good example, that PC-12.
Right, but that's also a good example of how you don't set a definite hard timetable if you warrant extra time.
Yeah, it gets extra that's time. Absolutely the truth.
Well, there's an option to reopen as well, is there not, or amend as information is brought to light that may not have been available before.
Absolutely.
How does that process work?
If additional factual information comes up after an investigation is done, then we're able to simply go in and addend the public record and add that to it. And if it takes additional analysis because we found additional facts, we can do that.
All right. Well, I'm sure I have a lot of other questions, but unfortunately we're running out of time. I'm sure some people who might be listening have more questions.
Where can they find you?
Yeah.
We have a small booth in the federal building. And if you know where Customs Border Patrol and the other federal partnership is, it's just north of the Flying Magazine tent. We're up in there in the southwest corner of the building. We've got ATC, we've got aerodynamics, myself with the engineering side, and we're anxious. We're totally happy to answer questions. That's what we're here for.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, we do thank you for coming in.
We've been speaking with Bob Swaim of the NTSB.
I'm Wireless Mike.
And Magneto Mel, and you're listening to EAA Radio.